Can we just look back over those years you played for Gloucester, Mike, particularly look at the captains, because you played under quite a number of different captains Gloucester.
I guess.
And perhaps, you know, if you could tell us a bit about them as captains and compare and contrast.
I can't recall the years of captaincy, but I know Gordon Hudson was captain more than 1 year, and he was a splendid captain.
Well, the captains are at the top of each of the lists.
Let's have a look back through your list then. Well, Gordon Hudson, 48-49, which, I mean, I didn't play much then, but he was a great guy, and then he captained again in 49-50. He's just a great club man, and you had great respect for him. He used to smoke himself silly, and if you went into the sports shop, I can't remember, it's just on the corner of a little road in the centre of Gloucester. He'd come down from upstairs and put his, because he always smoked, he put his cigarette on the stairs, and if you ever look round the corner of these stairs, every step on the treads had all these burnt cigarette marks. Amazing he never had a fire there. But although he was 32 when I was 16. In other words, he was twice my age, which is quite something to playing first class rugby.
Because in those days, the captain was responsible for organising the training and tactics and so on, wasn't it?
Well, I think that's gilding the lily a bit. The training was somebody like Roy Parry would run about 30 laps just jogging around, and that was his training. I might train with Roy Sutton and Wally Burrows and Willie Jones, because although I didn't play with them a great deal, I trained with them. And Willie Jones, his timing, was a great kicker of a ball and a cricketer, but he timed everything. And I can remember running up and down on the goalpost line, and he would be on the 25-yard line, not 22, but 25 as it was then, and he would put out passes to you that would hit your chest so hard that it hurt. You know, he was that sort of character. But training as such, it was entirely up to you. If you didn't turn up for training, and you played a bad match, you'd be dropped the next week. The training that these guys do now, an hour before they go out to play an international or a match, was more than we did for the whole of the week. I mean, we were nowhere near as fit as the guys today. I like to think that technically we probably, rugby skills were not different, might have been better, but their size, their weight, their strength, they're superb now, but we weren't. I mean, I was never keen on training. I would run two or three laps of the pitch and kick a few goals and do a few passes with different people. But, okay, as centres we might practice as scissors or something like that, and with the outside half. But it wasn't structured. It was just when we got out on a training night, we all arrived at different times. Whoever was out there, we trained with and just do a fiddle. So there wasn't a coach. We didn't have a coach. Sounds incredible, that, doesn't it? There was no one structuring your training.
Well, I have noticed in some of the club committee minutes that there were occasional meetings called between the committee and the players to discuss tactics. Did you ever come across
that? No, I never got involved in anything like that. No.
I must admit, as we've done these interviews, you know, with an increasing number of Gloucester players, it's been very noticeable how few of them profess any love of training.
No, I mean,
Having ever done any a lot. The notable exception, of course, being Phil Blakeway.
Well, that's a later age, isn't it? You see, I mean, I would catch the rail car from Cassius Green to the railway station in Gloucester, and then I would run down by the side of the railway, by the side of the arches, and I tell you, by the time I got to the Gloucester Rugby Ground, and also when you were training, your lungs were burning because there was so much sulphur in the air from the railway trains that were pumping out terrible stuff that you inhaled. And the smogs that we used to have were quite remarkable. I can remember matches that were, you couldn't see what was happening on the other wing.
Yeah.
They used to descend on the ground, and I suppose training in those conditions wouldn't have done you a lot of good anyway. You were just inhaling this stuff. That's an excuse for not training, isn't it? No, there wasn't a great structure chain training, but people kept fit, and they did, well, more than enough to keep in the team. Yeah. You train to your own ability, but if we had a decent coach as they do now, they'd have pulled a lot more out of us. They really would.
Yeah. Did you have pre-arranged moves, though, within the backs?
Yes, to a degree. Odd things would happen that... I remember, we had a record season, and the last match of the season was against Llanelli at King's Home. And we were level or one or two points down or something, and because I used to drop the occasional goal, I think John Tico was outside half, and whoever it was, captain, that they said, we right at the end of the match, swap over Mike with John, and obviously to drop a goal. And I stepped inside. Do you remember a chap called Lewis Jones, who played, well, I'm going back a long way, but he was a real star. He was a rugby union international for Wales, and he became rugby league and became an international with them. He had one bandy leg, and I stepped inside him and dropped a goal, and those sort of tactics, they were almost inspirational. Okay, you could say you played it off the cuff a lot, but you knew the game of rugby. Much the same as scoring the try against Blackheath. If I'd gone hell for leather for the corner, I wouldn't have got there. But just a check, which was, something that just comes to you in an instant, is enough to send the opposition past you and you go inside.
Any more captains that you'd like to comment on?
Well, we've got here Gordon Hudson, Tom Day, great respect for Tom, quiet man, he wouldn't bawl at his team. And Jack Watkins was much the same, he was a policeman. Bob Hodge, a leader of men and obviously a leader of the club that year, he was the sort of chap that would get people in a group and wind them up to better things. John Taylor. John was very much a loner. He was involved. He was an engineer, come designer, I think, and worked in Lydney for quite a while. I mean, he was a man you had respect for, but he knew what he wanted to do. He wasn't a fast runner, but he's a very determined runner. A wing that would run straight. And he wasn't terribly tall and he wasn't terribly heavy, but he did a lot, he punched a lot for his size and weight.
That was an outstanding season, wasn't it, under John Taylor?
31 wins, yes. Mm. Yes.
And I think he changed the tactics, didn't he, of the side. I seem to remember they played a more open game under him.
Yeah.
Or you played a more open game under him, which you must have enjoyed.
I mean, he was... As I've already mentioned, if he thought you weren't playing well, he couldn't kick you off the pitch. We didn't have substitutes and things like that, but he would move people around, He'd pull somebody out, perhaps if the wing forward wasn't playing well or was injured, and put somebody else in. But he was a man who could make decisions on the hoof, as it were. Mm. Yeah.
And presumably, we're still talking here about an age when... the players elected the captain at the start of the season, didn't they?
Yes. And George Hastings in 54-55. I think George was the sort of guy, he lived in Cheltenham, really, so in a sense he was not an outsider, because that sounds silly. I was an outsider living in Stroud, you know, for the people that lived in around Gloucester. But I think probably George was very well respected, and he was a much better prop forward before he got his caps. That sounds daft. It was hard to get a cap. It was hard to get into the England team, because those that were in stayed, and George was probably over the hill in a rugby sense when he got capped. He was a better forward before, but he was well respected by his chaps who were playing with him.
Well, and of course, Peter Ford only got his international caps very late in his career.
Well, Peter obviously is a Gloucester man through and through. I mean, he was in the greengrocery business, and he would drive down to Bristol in the morning, pick up a lorry load of veg, drive back to Gloucester, and when we were on tour, Peter most of the time didn't tour with us. He would do that on a Saturday morning and then turn round and drive down to Devon or Cornwall to play in the match in the afternoon and the evening, having driven from Gloucester to Bristol, back to Gloucester, and then down to play in the match. I mean, the guys were keen.
Yeah.
They were really keen.
Yeah.
Yeah, Peter thoroughly deserved his captaincy. In a trial match, beginning of this season, Peter and I were about the same sort of speed, running wise, and we had a trial match in the evening, and I'd broken away, and Peter was behind me. And because it was the evening, I could see his shadow. And that sounds daft, doesn't it? But I had my running to beat his shadow, so I would go that way and he'd come across and I'd go back away, only because I couldn't see him, but I knew where his shadow was. And he couldn't catch me because we were roughly the same speed. He'd say he was faster. But anyway. Well, that just about takes me up to the end of my captaincy. Yeah, Peter was... Yes, he...
Yes, I think Peter was probably captain when you finished your career.
Yeah. And then Cyril Thomas came on to be captain now. I mean, Cyril was seen to be quite old when I was... I was surprised to see Cyril. I was 58, 59. Mm. There, he was quite a character.
I think that was his last season.
Yeah.